Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Basketball is back, and BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. And as your continued source for all sports wagering information, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports and events, whether that's the NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, or even golf. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, to receive your rewards. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Early Duncan had it. They turned it over. Alley-oop back to Kevin. Oh, baby! Woo! KD! You can see it coming, and the building is electric off that slam dunk.
Catastrophic.
Hello and welcome back to the Believe in Timberwolves podcast, part of the Believe Network. I'm your host, Brendan Hedke. I'm sitting here with my co-host, Doug West. Doug, I am very energized. We were talking a little bit before we started. The Vikings just had one of the most insane regular season football games I think I've ever watched. Kind of mirroring the Minneapolis Miracle in ways, but it was like not one big miracle play, but like a bunch of little miracle plays and ups and downs that just kind of built up to probably the most excitement I've had watching a football game. So I'm kind of jacked for that. So we're recording this Sunday. I just want to let people know, because this is before the Cavs game. So we're in between Vikings game and before the Wolves and Cavs tip off on Sunday. Your Cowboys are playing right now. Why are we recording right now?
We won't talk about football like that. I mean, Cowboys are playing. Well, I'm taping it. But, yeah, that Viking game, though, I watched that game. I watched the end of it. A few of my boys I've grown up with, they're texting about this game, the best game of the year so far. I mean, I don't know how you can, put too many games above that. And to see the plays that were made on both sides, Diggs on the Buffalo side, Diggs and Allen. And then you have Cousins and Jefferson on, Jefferson with those catches. The catch that he made at the 2-yard line right there in overtime. I don't even know how he caught that ball. I mean,
I don't know how Cousins got the ball in there. I don't know how Jefferson caught it.
Yes, it was.
It's crazy to think like that Diggs and Jefferson essentially were like traded for each other. And they're like right? Both two of the top five wide receivers in the NFL this season. Like, I know we're not a football podcast, but that's Minnesota sports. We need some
Minnesota
light.
Sports. That we was, need some that light was exciting.
Here. Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit of light. Last time we spoke about the Timberwolves, I think they were 5-5, and I had a feeling that they were going to go on a good stretch here. And since then, this week has been 0-3, with a very tough Cleveland game, on the road tonight. So
Because we talked Sunday last week. So yes. Right the day before the Knicks game.
Yeah, we talked Monday, actually.
Monday.
Before the Knicks. Yes.
So the Knicks obviously won that game. I thought the Wolves looked okay against the Suns. Seemed like they were figuring some stuff out. And then in the Grizzlies game, I thought they looked really good offensively, especially in the first half. Right. But again, they're three losses in a row. And like we talked about last week, doesn't matter what the score was, or there's no silver linings when it comes to, I mean, a W is going to go in the win column only when you score more points. So I think they figured some things out offensively in that Grizzlies game. But now to see if that really translates and if they can put it together for four quarters and then for four, five, six games and like actually, you know, give some confidence to a fan base who's just dying for something to latch on to.
Yeah, it's really interesting too, because you know, you look at the three games that they've lost, you know, Phoenix, you know, the Memphis game, they came out with a different energy, a different mindset. It seemed like they played, I would say they played harder, more together. And it just, you know, when you think about it though, that was a team they had in the playoffs last year. And hopefully they're not like, you know, well, this is a playoff team from last year, so we're going to pick our game up a little bit more.
Right.
Now we need to pick our game up in total, everyone, for every game. And as you said, get in some rhythm and get on a winning streak here.
Yeah. And so that could start today here in just about an hour against the Cavs. Now I just saw the Cavs are going to be without Donovan Mitchell and Jarrett Allen in this game. Oh. I don't know. It didn't say what they were out with. And then a couple other players are out too. I wonder if maybe there's COVID or something. I don't know, but it's just interesting. It didn't seem like they were, I don't know if they had injuries before or what, but that's a big thing for the Wolves. I mean, that's two of their starters out. I think Dean Wade's also out. He's a role or like a, you know, a rotation guy. Kevin Love might've been out. There's a lot of people not playing, and the Wolves now are they going to be, like you said, are they going to be underestimating the team they're going up against now that Mitchell and Allen aren't out, thinking, okay, this team's down a lot of talent, we should be better. And they just can't let that happen. They need to come in not playing down, because they're still really good players on this Cavs team. They need to come out firing if they want to try to stop this losing streak.
Well, I wouldn't look at or worry about who's not playing for the Cavs. The Wolves have to worry about doing what they do and do it better. The Cavs have played stretches without Allen last year. He was out for a while last year, and without you know, Mitchell, they have a good squad. They have some very, very good guards. You know, still guards coming off the bench. So I'm sure it's going to be a tough game. It's going to be a tough game either way you look at it.
Yeah, I think it will be too. I was excited to see how the Wolves matched up with a Mobley Allen front court.
Right.
Like we've talked about before, it's very different, too big lineup, but it still is a too big lineup.
More athletic too.
Definitely more athletic, definitely more versatile defensively when you talk about Mobley being able to get out and guard a lot better than Cat can, and he moves his feet a little bit better too. So yeah, I would think that overall that would be just something really fun to kind of see. And then Donovan Mitchell versus Rudy Gobert, first time playing each other after being teammates for
right.
for so long. Like that's something that I was really looking forward to, you know, see if Donovan can throw down a dunk on Rudy or Rudy can block a shot, like something to just give some juice to a guy that Rudy needs it after not playing very, very well. I don't mean he wasn't playing well, but the team as a whole not playing well.
Right. I'm just looking. It says Mitchell's out because of an ankle injury.
Okay. Yeah.
So he has an ankle injury. So he's out.
It looked like Jarrett Allen was questionable coming into, and it said a left ankle soreness, and then also illness for both Mitchell and Allen were questionable with an illness too.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not sure entirely which one's actually keeping them out. But they're out. It looks like Ricky Rubio obviously still out because of his ACL injury. Mm-hmm. Dean Wade being out too.
Forgot all about Ricky Rubio, man. He was having a great year before he tore that ACL.
Well, and it's crazy because he got traded after he tore
from,
the ACL.
That's
went
right.
to
yes.
Indiana, and now he's back. And I wonder how I mean, that's, he should be a helpful player for that team once he, yes, once he comes back too. And he has synergy with Donovan Mitchell after playing with him in Utah too. So yeah, I love Ricky Rubio. So I hope he does come back and he's very, you know, he can not return and be like a shell of himself. I want him to have that, that solid return of what he has been in the past.
So question, how do we keep Cat on the floor?
You're talking foul wise?
Yes.
So I tweeted something out the other night saying that he has to figure it out. And it wasn't so much like, sometimes it's the frustration fouls where he gets caught up. And in the Memphis game, it wasn't really that. It was a lot more of like the just silly fouls that he didn't need to do. The one Steven Adams under the hoop, some of them are preventable, not even just by Cap, by other people. When he fouled Adams under the hoop, if the Wolves just get the ball, like right, that play never happens.
That never happens. Exactly.
The one on John Morant driving to the basket that fouled him out, it wasn't a, like, you could, I would say it was probably a foul, but it wasn't like a dumb foul. Cat didn't do anything dumb. He was just like, John Morant's a lot faster than him. He was trying to keep up with him and he just didn't quite get out of the way enough. So that one's tough, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is, because I'd love to know how many of his fouls come with him being at the five on offense with Rudy, right, up, basically without Rudy on the floor, and how many come with Rudy on the floor, and see if there is any correlation. Just from like thinking about it, I couldn't tell you which one happens more, and if he's fouling more on the perimeter or on the inside. But he's got to figure something out.
Yeah, one of the things, I mean, he has to figure out how the officials are officiating him. I mean, this has been going on his whole career. It's not like it's something new. You know, this is, what, 8 years in?
Yeah, this is year, you know, eight, yeah.
Yeah, officials know you. They have a... they have a sense of how you play, and the, as you said, the dumb fouls that you commit. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, how frustrated he gets, but he has to find a way to just be smarter in situations where the team needs him. And also, you know, coach has to also keep him on the bench sometimes, you know, yeah, he got four fouls in the first half of the game last week. I mean, it's, yeah, it, you know, got to be smart.
I always think about that as like a coaching philosophy thing too, and trying to figure it out for myself as a coach, like when you take your best player off the court, you know, are you going to foul them out yourself by sitting them down, or they go with the rest of the game without a foul? But it also comes down to who that player is. Cat's a player that is prone to fouling. So you have to be extra cautious with him in those situations. He's, I mean, he's going to, every game he's going to end up with at least four fouls. Like that's just kind of the player that, that he is. And he, I mean, that's on him to figure that out. And I talked about the Memphis game, how like he didn't have any of those necessarily really dumb fouls, offensive fouls that were just like really bad and obvious, like the kick out on the three when he kicks his leg out. but those are the ones. So Memphis game didn't have that, but other games, those happen a lot, either that or really blatant knee kick out on a mm-hmm. screen or something. Those are the ones that eliminate those ones first. Try, you know, if you knock, that's probably one a game that he picks up at least like that. If you knock that out, you know, you're thinking, well, one foul is not a lot, but in certain situations, depending when you pick up that one foul, it can play a huge factor in his minutes and when he can be on the floor. So I think step one is to have a concerted effort to make sure those aren't happening. Now we haven't seen the leg kick out for a little while this season, but he had a few at the beginning of the year. But the screen thing, it's not as bad as it used to be in the past either. So maybe he's cleaning those up. Then you really got to look at how you're using him. So I think it's both on him and Finch and when you leave him in the game, when you take him out.
Right, right. Yeah. Talking about usage, I mean, players are the players, we're at the bench. I mean, it's, we're reaching, huh? When we got 10 playing 10 some nights, eight some nights, trying to figure out what works, who yeah. works. You know, it was good. It was good to see, you know, McLaughlin's been playing a lot. Is that because D'Lo's not shooting the ball well, or is it?
I think it's just to inject some pace and some ball movement into a team that severely lacks both of those yes. things. And I don't know, you know, if, I mean, Chris Finch said for this Cavs game, like, there's not going to be a change in the starting lineup, but you have to wonder if at some point, if it continues down this path, if there is a change in that lineup. And you talked about personnel too. It's been tough not to have Naz Reid for the last couple games.
Right.
I think he would have been big in that Grizzlies game, energizing that second unit a little bit more. And the Wolves didn't pull out Luka Garza. I think Nate Knight played a little bit, maybe in the Suns game, but Naz Reid would have been helpful in those games. Not saying he's the difference maker, but I mean, he's been a really energizing.
He's been good.
So
he's been playing well.
He's also not going to be playing tonight. He's ruled out. So hopefully on Wednesday he can play against the Magic, and try to get back into the flow of things. But yeah, there's been a lot of reaching. Like you said, Bryn Forbes has played a little bit the last couple of games.
Yeah, it looked like we're trying to figure out what pieces work together. And this is what, you know, we were saying earlier without everyone playing in the preseason. Now you're trying to figure this out, and it's, you know, you're on a 3-game losing streak right now. We got to find a way to tighten it up and get a W tonight. I mean, I think it's a big game. It's an important game. You don't want to get on one of these losing streaks, 4, 5, 6 games early in the season.
Yeah. And I think what's tough too with reaching for all these guys is no one's really showed up. Austin Rivers looked okay, and then now he got sick, so he's been out. Forbes hit a couple shots, also has had some really bad moments. Nate Knight has, like, in the Suns game, didn't do a whole lot. And Jalen Noel hasn't been playing very well the last few games either, and his role is really diminished in favor of players like Rivers or Forbes or someone who provides something else than Noel does. So yeah, I don't know. Seems like Finch is just, not saying he's desperate, but he's really just trying to find who's going to work in this lineup.
Yeah. It's always one of those things, you know, speaking of bench players, when you have, you know, that you're going to go in and you know, at the 5-minute mark, I'm taking this guy out. I just get up off the bench and, you know, get up to the table. And you know, you're going to get those minutes. It seems like you play a little less stressed. And when you don't know whether you're getting minutes or not, it's like you're on this roller coaster.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to, you know, prove that you belong on the court when the time given. But, you know, some of these guys, you know, it's got to step up a little bit more here.
And you can definitely get into the point where you're pressing a little bit, trying to prove you belong. And then even though your intentions are good and you're trying to do something positive, it can turn into being negative too. See, I don't know what the rotation ends the year at. I don't know what happens, but I'm less worried about the bench. I'm more worried about what the starting five can bring to the table. Because they have a lot more talent than they're showing. And that's kind of been, I mean, that's been talked about by everyone all year long. It's just like the product they're putting in the court does not equal even the sum of its parts. Really good teams have good players, and then they gel so well together that they're even better than the talent level they have. And the Wolves are at a point where they have a talent level, but their effort and their chemistry knocks it down lower than it should be. So that's got to be figured out. How does either Coach Finch or the players on the court, what's like step one? What would you do to try to figure out those problems?
Well, I think the first thing is they got to trust each other. And knowing that they trust each other and have each other's back. It seems like there's a lot of situations that happen where they're like looking at each other like, why weren't you there? Or, you know, and I was actually, it's funny, Dane Moore.
Yep. Right? Dane, yep.
I was listening to one of his podcasts. And he was talking about the guys on the court just don't look like there's so many different schemes that they're using defensively. And, you know, with Cat's in, we're using this scheme. With Cat and Rudy's in, they're using this scheme. With one's on the court and the other. So that's a lot of thinking on the court. And if everyone's out there just thinking about, like, okay, well, all right, Cat's in the game. Who else is in the game? You know, what am I supposed to be doing now? All right, Cat and Rudy are both in the game. Okay, so what are we, you know? So there's always four guys that are, you know, those two are switching, but the defenses are switching so much. They got to find a common defense to play, you know, for everyone, so that they're all on the same page, so that they're not looking lost out there.
And I think the good teams in the NBA do play multiple defenses, but they also are just really good at their base defense. And I think the Wolves have to simplify things, go back, run a base defense, get it figured out. Then if you find success, that's when you start to implement a switching scheme, or then you reintroduce the high wall defense that Kat's using. I think the defense they have to use is they have to go to drop coverage. Rudy Gobert is one of the best defensive players in drop coverage in the league, probably in the last 50 years in the league. He's been just really dominant in his time in Utah. Kat's not been good in a drop defense as the center in his career. But if Rudy Gobert is playing 36 minutes a night, 34 minutes a night, Kat's only got to play it for 12, 14 minutes. Can you get by thinking that the offense will be good enough, so in that 12, 14 minutes, that your defense is solid enough to win you basketball games? And I think that's, I would argue that I think the defense should be really good with Gobert in there for those 34 minutes, that they should be able to survive with Kat playing in a drop scheme for 14 minutes a night. And then, like I said, you start to eventually trickle in all of those new schemes once you have one of them figured out.
Yeah, well, you know, it's really interesting. I agree with everything you just said there. But when I look at Kat and Rudy playing together on the floor, it seems like they're putting Kat into some scrambling situations where he has to get out on the perimeter and guard. And that's something new. That's that newness for him. You know, he has to be able to go out there and, you know, if they start scrambling, he has to be able to step up and go compete now on the perimeter, whereas before he was sitting under the basket. So there are some times that I think he still gets caught in there where he doesn't realize, oh, that is my coverage, and these guys are getting wide open shots. So again, it comes with a lot of repetition, but it's a new position for him. You know, it's a lot of different things going on out there in the perimeter, and it's taking time, but time's starting to slip away here.
So you talked about step one just being trusting teammates and everything like that, and we've kind of talked about that last week with trusting that Gobert's got your back when he's right on the floor, allowing you to get up into your guy a little bit more. How does that trust get built? Is that a time thing? Is it a concerted, like, you're always in your mind, just like you have to be telling yourself that you're trusting these guys? What builds that trust with the team? Like, is it something that's natural?
It comes through repetition. It comes through a lot of reps, and a lot of reps of seeing it done right. You know, when you're starting to question each other and who's supposed to be where, and, you know, you're looking around, that trust isn't there. So it's, you know, practice. How much practice time have they really had in the last few weeks, you know?
Right.
You know, to rep the rotations over and over again, and knowing that, all right, I get beat, somebody's got my back. It's there. And it's just, again, it's talking on defense. You know, everyone always talks about, you know, the most important thing is talking on defense. Most NBA teams, there's a lot of talking on the defense end. I haven't been close enough to a game this year to hear how much talking's going on in that court right now with them. But when you,
it's not a
sure
lot
of what you're, yeah, because they're not sure.
I was in it was just the Rockets game. It's definitely a lot less than it was last year, which I mean,
Patrick Beverly
and Jared Vanderbilt too.
Yes.
Like very vocal defensive leaders. And Rudy is that.
Right.
But Rudy's one guy. You're missing it on the perimeter like you had with Pat Bev. So, I mean, D'Lo communicates on defense, but it's hard to take that from a guy who is not playing great defense himself. At least I think it would be. So it's definitely less than last year. And when you have guys still trying to figure things out, like communication's key. It has to be
key. Yeah, because if you don't know, you're not saying anything. You know, you're just going to be looking around like, am I in the right position? Am I not? What's and then again, you have very, very good players in the NBA. Players are going to make plays. And when that player makes a play, that's when, you know, when they break the defense down, then it's about your coverage on the backside, getting shooters off the 3-point line, all those things. And again, it comes with a lot of repetition. So what, we're in what, 13 games in right now?
Yep.
13 games in. So yeah, I would figure by those first 10, 15 games that stuff would start to be flowing, but they're still trying to find each other.
So let's switch over. We've talked a lot about defense. Offensively, I kind of was looking at what Memphis was doing last night and what Memphis was doing. And this was mostly with Brandon Clark in the game, which different player than Gobert, but I think it was still make a lot of sense. What they were doing a lot of was Ja Morant's out on the perimeter. Okay. They're having Clark in that dunker spot, which he's a really good dunker spot player. I think Gobert's got to get moved to that dunker spot. I really think that you do that, you get the ball to Anthony Edwards out in the perimeter. His first step is one of the best in the league. You let him get past his defender. Gobert's there in the opposite dunker spot. And there's a couple plays last night where Morant drives, Gobert or Cat or whoever is in there, comes up. It's a lob. Clark's right there. You could do that same action with Gobert. You have Cat in one corner or above the break, McDaniels and D'Lo in the corners. And that just seems like simple things that this offense can do. And it feels like they're forcing too much of, you know, Rudy out in the
perimeter play.
And Dane Moore brought this up probably in the same podcast episode that you were talking about. Him and Britt Robson were talking about playing Cat, this is going to sound ridiculous, in a Desmond Bane offensive role, which would really obviously lean into his shooting, which I like, but Bane also, it does have the freedom to put the ball on the deck a little bit, but I think it's less of Cat trying to be Jokic in the post with his passing, or Embiid in the post with just being a dominant post player, like those two were talking in that episode, and more about leaning into his shooting, because he is such a good shooter. What are your thoughts on that type of role for Cat, and then just the general principle of Gobert in the dunker spot?
Well, it would be interesting because I think if I'm not mistaken, Memphis runs Bane off a lot of flare screens from the elbow area, and he catches the ball and he's either catch and shoot or catch and put the ball on the floor and make a play. And I think that's something that Cat could do well, but it then comes down to him being able to create separation to get open for that shot.
Right.
You know, I think if I were defending that, I would just switch the screen with Cat and, you know, look more to try to steal the ball. But, you know, it'd be interesting because they did run a lot of five out. They ran a lot of action up top in the middle where it's really hard to trap guys or whatnot. And then they got, as you said, whenever he got downhill, he was able to throw lobs. But you know, Bane's been playing well, shooting the ball well. I think it would be something interesting to see Cat in. Also put him in some floppy action, some pin downs for him where he's coming up and shooting the ball.
I think the counter to if they are just gonna switch a pick or a screen like that where Cat comes up would just then that's when you allow Cat to drive because he is so good at taking those. Like smaller guys,
yes.
He might not beat them to the hoop, but he's stronger than them, longer than them. He can turn around, back him down once he gets to 10 feet, whatever he has to do. I think he's generally pretty good at that. Or he can just shoot over the top of them. If it's a 6 foot
right,
five
exactly.
guy, his release is so high. So I think that's where it comes in. And obviously screen navigation on offense as, you know, he's not going to be as good as Bane coming off screens because he's just a lot bigger. But I think we've seen him off screens and he's been pretty good in his career. The only trouble I see, and obviously you're not going to put Gobert in the dunker spot all game long. His screening is so important, but I'm saying when you're not running a pick and roll action with Gobert, I'd rather see him in the dunker spot than at the top of the key because we saw him put the ball on the deck a couple times against Memphis and nothing good came of it. I think that part needs to be eliminated. We need to stop trying to force the ball in there and just get him in the dunker spot or get him in pick and rolls. Use what he's best at. Have your other three spread in the floor and put the ball in Ant's hands a lot more. And maybe D'Lo can find a rhythm if he's shooting, catch and shoot threes instead of, you know, coming off screens, and pulling up. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. He seems to be a very good catch and shoot shooter, better than coming off screens, you know, with D'Lo. It'd be interesting to see him, you know, make some shots. He knocked some down. Was it last week early on? I thought he was going to get going, but still been struggling to shoot the ball here.
Yeah, he's, I mean, a lot of fans are really
down on him.
Yeah. That's a kind way to put it. It's obvious that he hasn't played up to his level of most of last season. He really did struggle at the end of last season for the last 20 games or so. So he's really kind of been in a slump for a while. I thought adding Gobert would help that because it's a lob partner that he was really missing. I don't know how long it's going to take him to come out of the slump, if he comes out of the slump, but it's something that he definitely needs to try to figure out. Otherwise it will be like, what can we get for D'Angelo Russell in a trade? Where can we send D'Angelo Russell and try to get something positive that will help this team back? I don't think that the team's at that point, but it's pretty clear that the fan base is at that point with him.
Yeah. Well, you know, the teams, they'll hear the fan base, but we can't, you know, really worry about that. I think, you know, it's funny. You said he struggled the last 20 games last year, and he's been pretty much up and down this year. And the Gobert thing we thought would have helped him, but it seems like he's trying to find out where his shots are going to come from in the offense and, you know, when to shoot the ball, when not to shoot the ball. He doesn't look comfortable.
Right.
You know, in the shots that I saw him make, you know, he making shots at the end of the shot clock, or getting shots at the end of the shot clock, which is never good. You know, it seems like he's trying to figure out where he fits in, what his role really is within the offense.
Yeah. And I think that it's got to be less dictated by him at this point. He's a good passer, but he hasn't shown as much of that this year. There's been a lot more turnovers and he hasn't been shooting the ball well. I think we need to simplify things for him, get him in an action where, you know, he can just get open shots, and then you can try to build off of that. And also just let Anthony Edwards just take over a little bit. I'm not saying it's isolation possessions, but Ja Morant has the ball in his hands a lot. You can't expect Edwards to take a big leap. The ball is not going to be in his hands as much as someone like Ja or Luka or James Harden or those ball dominant guards that you hope Edwards can be. You got to give him the opportunity to do that. And when you have someone dictating so many possessions and doing it slowly.
Right. That's big right there. Slowly. Slowly is big.
Someone, I don't remember if it was Dane or someone was talking about D'Angelo Russell looks like he's always trying to find which option is the best, where Jordan McLaughlin just goes quick,
just plays.
And so they were saying, like, you don't see Jordan McLaughlin have like that home run pass very often, but you also don't see Jordan McLaughlin dribbling the ball for 7 seconds at the beginning of a possession, trying to find the best option.
Figure out. Right.
So for D'Lo, when he is initiating the offense quickly, got to do it quick. The ball eventually is going to come back around to him if it needs to. And if it doesn't, it's probably because they found a good shot elsewhere because he moved the ball quick.
Yeah. And hearing what you just said, it just seems like they're not comfortable with the offense they're running. Guys just aren't comfortable. You know, you'd mentioned last week, I think it was Ant, that just had his first dunk, you know, so guys are trying to figure out the offense. Again, it's not, I know it sounds funny, but you're not used to, as a guard, this day and age, to be on the court with 2 7-footers. You know, like bigs always seem to, in my mind, they were always in the way.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, you know, you're trying to create something and if they're not skilled enough, they're just letting help just sit in your lap there. So, you know, that's the thing there. If you can get by a guy, you got Rudy in that dunker spot, they got to step up. And that's those easy two right there for him.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how they, you know, starting lineup's going to be the same tonight, but how long are they going to stay with that, with the starting lineup, with those guys in there, and how much more what's going to be Kyle Anderson or who, you know, how much time are they going to get with, you know, playing the four and Kat and Rudy, you know, at some five.
Yeah. I think if things don't get better soon, there will be a shift in the starting unit. I don't think
it's not going to be those two.
No. It's the biggest thing I wonder is what are the politics of that, of D'Angelo Russell getting moved to the bench? He's a guy in a max contract. Obviously he's not playing at that level, but I mean, he's a guy that also is trying to get a new contract, and he's just a player that they tried to trade this offseason, couldn't find the trade partner for him. So instead they kind of punted in a sort of way and traded for Gobert, who they thought was going to help him a lot. Hasn't happened. I don't know. It just feels like that's like a big political issue in a team for someone like D'Angelo Russell to get benched in favor of Jordan McLaughlin.
That's a big, big, big political issue. When you have a guy on a max contract and we're going to put him on the bench like that, it's better to move him probably, yeah. You know, because it's just going to cause more headaches. If anything. I don't think that's interesting. That'd be an interesting one there.
And the tough thing about moving him is
where,
and then what do you trade with him? And you don't have any first round picks to trade because they're all tied up. You're not going to get a player of D'Angelo Russell's caliber back. Now you might get a guy who fits better, but he's going to be a lot less talented. Like, he also makes a ton of money, so you got to bring back salary that matches.
Yes, true.
I don't know who that is. I mean, Mike Conley's a name that's been brought up a lot. And I know I'm not at the point of trading D'Angelo Russell quite yet, but it's getting a lot closer, obviously. And a lot of people are at that point. Mike Conley's a person that's been brought up a lot. One reason, you know, he's had success playing with Rudy Gobert.
Rudy, right.
He's a guy whose contract also makes sense with the trade because it has, you know, a big salary, just like D'Angelo Russell's. Right. What are your thoughts on that type of move? Because otherwise, and I don't even know if that's feasible, but like, there's not a lot of options out there where you bring someone of quality back.
Yeah, I was actually shocked when you said Mike Conley. He has played with Rudy, played with him for a few years. He did get his game going. His game seemed to come back to him when he was in Utah, had some very good games, plays with pace, definitely pushes the ball up the court. Smart, intelligent player, but I don't see it happening yet. But that's an interesting one there, especially because those two have played together before.
Yeah, and I think the reason that Conley might be someone who is plausible is he does have another year in his contract after this one, where D'Angelo is expiring. So it would be a situation where Utah is taking on D'Lo so they can free up the $24 million that Conley's owed next year by taking on D'Lo's money this year, and then they have a little more room.
A little more wiggle room,
right? And they could, you know, take on that money and kind of, yeah, have that wiggle room and have some more freedom for next year. But they're also playing really well. So like,
yeah, they're playing really well. And no, I don't one, know. No one saw that coming.
No, I definitely did not see that coming. I had them. I didn't have them as the worst team in the league because there is a lot of talent on that team. Right. It's just like, it's a weird group of people, but they just kind of all bought into like, people don't believe in us. Let's go to work. And it's worked really good for them. So I don't know how long that keeps up. If they want to be a team that is winning games because they don't have a clear star player moving forward. Like they have a lot of picks and they have picks of teams like the Wolves who aren't playing too good. So those might end up being good picks, but yeah, I don't know what their end goal is, but if they wanted to move off Mike Conley, if you're looking to trade D'Angelo Russell and the Jazz are looking to get off Mike Conley, it seems like a logical move that could be made. But Conley's also old. He's 36. Yeah. Like It's not a player you can bet on for the next 5 years to be the guy to bring you somewhere. So I don't know. Like I said, I'm not at that point, but every poor game, it gets closer, and a lot of people are already at that point.
Well, I just nixed that thought of a trade when you said 36.
Yeah.
I mean, that's 10 years older than D'Lo.
Let me take that back. He's 35. He's 35.
He's
right
still
now.
9 years but older still, than him. But yeah. Still, it's, I mean, that's, he has more, some more miles on his legs. You know, it's, yeah, that'd be a hard one right there.
Yeah. So I don't know. Otherwise, you're looking at George Hill caliber point guards. Like, there's not a lot of great options in that sense. So
yeah, it's very true. There's not a lot of great options now that you mentioned that.
I mean, it's hard to find a quality point guard. It's also hard to do that when you're trying to trade a $30 million point guard. Most teams that have a good point guard don't want to give up a good point guard because they need him. And D'Angelo Russell is just such a funky player that you can't count on his skill set working in every environment. So I don't know. But like I said, I think he's going to figure it out. I do believe in this lineup. I think it's just going to be a matter of simplifying things, calling more set plays and a lot less freedom on offense.
That may be the best thing right there, where those guys have to come down and run a set play instead of having an open offense every time down the floor. Because I'm sure Rudy's probably used to running more set plays than just playing free flow and reading react offense, reading his teammates.
Yeah.
And I think that would definitely help the whole situation out. That's a good job there, coach.
It's not a unique thought to me. It's something that a lot of people have said, but I definitely see the benefits in that, because you have to earn the right to have the freedom.
Right.
So I think that would be an easy way. Simplify it that way. Simplify the defense by picking one scheme, sticking to it, call more set plays. Then you can start to give them more freedom back. You can start to implement new defensive schemes once you figure out something. It kind of felt like the Wolves are trying to do too much so far this year.
Right.
Tone it down a little bit, figure out the basics, then you can start to build up.
Go back to the basics. That's what I was thinking.
That would be my fix. And Chris Finch is smart. I think he's going to figure it out, but I can't say the effort issues are obviously they've been on the players. I think some of the blame has to go on Finch for maybe sticking with this scheme and these ideas a little bit too long and not trying to simplify. He's made tweaks, but I think it's going to take a little more than minor tweaks to get this thing on the right track.
Agreed. I think it's going to have to. I really like what you just said there, though, about the set offense. I think I have to really look at that. That's that you know, put guys in positions, run sets.
Just make everything be intentional as to why you're doing what you're doing on the court.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's going to be a way to bring up the pace with D'Angelo Russell. You know, if he knows what action he's going to be running, get the ball of his hands quick so it can move, get it where it needs to go, rather than just trying to dissect and wasting 8-9 seconds off the clock right away. So
yeah, we'll see if they get into that tonight. Be interesting. Really interesting.
This would be a great
game for it.
The Cavs are a good team, regardless of Mitchell and Allen being out. That's a lot of talent, but they're still a quality team that plays really hard. They still got Darius Garland. They still have Evan Mobley,
LeVert.
Very quality role players, Caris LeVert. It'd be great to get a win here if you could win this one on Wednesday, win against the Magic, start to build. I'm not saying you got to go on an 8-game win streak, but win 4 out of 7. Like, that's got to take those steps now so that eventually you can actually start to put together a real streak of wins and quality play and hopefully right your ship. I mean, at the end of the day, seeding in the playoffs, it matters. But if you struggle at the beginning of the year, you figured your stuff out and you end up as the 6th seed and you could win a first round against a 3 seed and then you could build off of that. I mean, your seed doesn't determine how good a team you are, but the Wolves have to make the playoffs before we worry about what seed they are in the playoffs.
Yeah, so. It's very true. Very, very true.
Do you have any last thoughts on this team for tonight or for the next week or so before we talk again?
Yeah, well, we got to rebound the ball tonight.
That's been big,
too. It's good. It might be good that Allen is out, we talked about it last week. Everyone thinks Rudy's going to get every rebound, so guys are taking off. So we got to make sure rebound the ball. I think they said Memphis, a lot of offensive rebounds.
It was really bad, yeah.
Oh, I think it was 15 rebounds for 32 points, 15 offensive rebounds, 32 points. That's unheard of.
Yeah, way too much leaking out after the shot goes up.
Right.
And guys just – offense players following their shot because there's nobody there. You got to – it's got to be more of a concerted effort to crash a glass on defense so that – I mean, sure, you might not get a fast break on offense, but at least you aren't giving up the two quick points. I mean, 15, 32 points, that's over 2 points per offensive rebound, which is, like you said, unheard of. So crash the defensive glass. It might be everybody crashes, nobody leaks out, and we just, until we can figure out that we need to rebound the ball, like that might have to be something too. And that's big.
Everyone crashed glass to walk the ball up the court, run set plays. We're going back in time here.
Yeah. if we got to do it, we got to do it.
Back to the basics. What works, whatever
simplify,
works.
Simplify. I think simplify is, if I had to pick one word to say what the Wolves need to do, would be to simplify things. So, well, Doug, thank you for finding time today and waiting for me to finish that Vikings game so we could hop on. I hope your Cowboys beat the Packers today so that the Vikings lead is even farther ahead, in the NFC North. But, thanks for taking the time. Thanks everybody for listening to this episode of the Believe in Timberwolves podcast presented by BetOnline. I am Brendan Hetke. He's Doug West, and we'll be back soon. Peace out.
Peace.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.